Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of a fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com. This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Hey, Halton here, and I just want to take a few seconds to remind you we're just 4 weeks away from FDIC. Hot classes are filling up fast. There is space left in a few of the workshops. Please sign up now. Don't miss out on an opportunity to get CAPC credit, attend some of the greatest events in firefighting this April. Go to FDIC.com.
Good evening. I'm assuming I got in a little late this evening. I apologize for that. I hope that everybody is online, and I'm assuming they are according to a text I got. So I want to welcome everybody in. We are just super excited about our guest this evening. It's taken us about a year to get him freed up because he's in demand. He's popular. He's one of the best speakers on the circuit, and that's why we've asked him to join us tonight. So let me start with introduction. Let me start with this. Let me take a second and encourage everybody, like the commercial and the ad did, about FDIC's right around the corner. If you're not registered or you haven't picked your classes, you need to get on that. It's going to be amazing, as always. Myself and Anthony and our guests tonight's going to all be there. Do not miss this great opportunity. So let me start with my introduction. I'm Todd Edwards, 31 years of Atlanta Fire Rescue, part-time with another job now, and I just get to work and socialize with guys all over the country. So, Anthony, if you want to introduce yourself, that'd be great, bro.
Anthony Rowett, and I'm a captain with the Mobile Fire Department in Mobile, Alabama. Been here going on 14 years, did 3 years as a volunteer in northern New Jersey before that. Like Todd said, going to be at FDIC. Definitely recommend everybody makes it up there.
Awesome, awesome. And now this is very unique because not only is our guest tonight one of the best engine guys in the entire country, he's also a very, very close personal friend of both mine and Anthony's. I cannot say enough about this guy. I've had the privilege and honor of really this entire year. I probably have spent, you know, as weird as this sounds, I've spent more time with our guests than I have at my own house with my wife. So, Lieutenant Stephen Robinson, please introduce yourself to everybody. We probably don't need much, but go ahead, bro.
Nah, just Steve Robertson. I'm a lieutenant with Columbus Fire here in Columbus, Ohio. I work at Engine Company 18. Been on the job, let's see now, Columbus, I've been 29 years, and I've been in the fire service now, 32 and a half, and, I'm a blessed guy that got to fall in the job early at 19 and 19 and a half, and just be blessed to work through and get some opportunities and get to teach with great people. And learn from great people. I mean, we're still learning. I take every class I can take, and I take as many notes as I can take because I'm always learning something from somebody. So, 1,600-person job here in Columbus. It's a lot bigger than people think. I got promoted in 2002, so I've been a boss a couple years. I'm either the smartest guy on the job staying at lieutenant, the dumbest job on the guy because I can't pass the captain's test, so I haven't figured out which yet. But that's where I'm at, and that's what I do.
Well, and Steve's very humble in his description. His engine company is one of the busiest, and he's speaking from an experience base. This isn't a textbook instructor. This is an experience-based guy. When he's teaching, for the guys listening tonight that may not know a lot about Steve, Steve is solely he is an experience-based guy. That's what one of the very unique things about the way he handles his business. So I kind of want to typically we kind of have a format. I did not do that this time. So what I want to kind of start off with, and I want to start this with Steve because he brought it up, the fact about learning as instructors, how important it is for us to continue to keep learning and sitting in these classes. And I'm always amazed at how much I learn when I sit in these classes. If you could talk a little bit more about that, Steve, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get the opportunity, again, like you do, Todd, and Anthony does, to travel the country. And you know, we have our road family, you, Anthony, Ray McCormick, Bill Gustin, you know, and I get the opportunity sometimes to sit and listen to these guys speak. You know, I've probably heard Bill Gustin speak 20 times. Every time Bill Gustin speaks, I have 2 pages of notes. Whether it's the second time I heard him do that class or the fifth time I've heard him do that class, I end up with 2 pages of notes of things I hadn't heard prior. And if the moment that you think that you know or you think you have a clue or you think you've got it figured out is probably the moment you should retire. You spoke to my experience. My classes are solely based on my mistakes. If anybody's attended my classes, all that subject matter is my mistake. So, you know, you're not going to learn any younger other than getting out there and doing things. You know, FDIC this year, I'm writing a new class, Engine Company Tactical Traps, and we're going to go deep on a lot of things there. You know, knee wall fires. I was fortunate enough to have an unbelievable boss coming up. Name was Bob Cloud, and God rest his soul, he passed this year. And unbelievable boss. Well, you know what? We had knee wall fires. I didn't know what it was. I'm in the attic. I'm throwing water. It's getting hotter and blacker. Things aren't going well. And he says, stop. Quit pushing. You got to back up and open it up, right? But he didn't let me push beyond the point I needed to push, because if I did, then the thing's going to flash on me and I'm in a really bad spot. They start opening up behind you, things go sideways. So continually learn. Be humble enough to yourself and the job to say, I don't know it all. I'm going to get something out of this. This isn't a waste of my time. Even if you've seen the person speak before, and Todd, Anthony, you can speak to this. I've never seen anyone give the same class twice, and it's the same name. I've always got something out of it. It always changes a little bit to where you get something out of it.
100% agree. And I tell guys all the time, I've never delivered the same class ever. It sounds like the same title, but it's always a different class. And I agree. I've got 3 notebooks that I constantly use. They're hardback books. I take notes when I'm teaching. Students will say something to me. I'm like, I've never heard of that. I immediately write it down. And that, I think, is one of those unknown perks about teaching, is how much we actually learn from our students. And I want to kind of expand on that as well. Go ahead, Rob.
So, I'm going to echo a lot of what Steve said, which is going to go to the fact that I talk about you guys being mentors all the time, but that the biggest thing for me was going to these conferences when I met you guys, other people, and started teaching at them was – the influence that I saw was you're going to keep learning because, like Steve said, I've seen – Todd, I see you taking notes in every class at every conference. FDIC, I'm going to say last year because Steve specifically brought that class up, I saw Steve sitting in the front row of Bill Gustin's class. You know, he's one of the biggest instructors there in the engine company realm as well, but he's sitting in the front row taking notes. I've seen Bill Gustin sitting in people's classes taking notes. Seen Ray McCormack sitting in people's classes, Champo. Cap Morris, you know, so it was always just like,
that,
okay, they're constantly
up, so.
Learning.
Hey, Anthony, I'm going to interrupt you for just a second. I apologize.
Yep, go ahead.
And it's a Cap Morris story, now Chief Morris. But my first year lecturing at FDIC, It was the first year I did Stretching for Success, I should say. Not my first year lecture, but the first year, brand new class. Tom Kenny's in the front row, God rest his soul, from Hyannis. 5 minutes before the program starts, Cap Morse walks up and says, Stevie, how are you? I said, good, Cap, how are you? It's good to see you, good to see you. He says, is it going to screw you up if I sit right there? And he looked at the front row of the first seat. Now, you want to talk about, you have pressure already. You're at the greatest conference in the world of FEIC. And now you have Cap, you have a 300 years experience in the front row. In the first five guys, right? You want to talk about pressure. That's pressure. But when Captain Moore sits in your class, it makes you feel really good because it's content, right? He believes in the content you have. So while you get out of it what you put in it, nobody handed us these opportunities. Does that kind of play with what you're saying? I mean, nobody made me go to classes. Nobody made me do more. Nobody. I could have just went to work every third day, got my paycheck, worked my side job, and I would have been just fine. I would have had the same amount of money I got now. I'd have been just fine and had a really nice career. But
yeah, I think
passion you have for the job, it changes that.
Definitely.
Go ahead, Todd. I'm sorry.
No, I was just echoing what you were saying, Steve. I think you're 100% right, and me and you obviously were just together in, Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, and it was an incredible group and the majority of our students of that particular class were all volunteer firemen, all of them into the damn job. And I think
they're giving up their weekend to do it, you know, and you're going to see that at FDIC, right? These guys are giving up a week of their vacation with their family because they love the job. You know, that's what it's about to me.
Yeah, I'm right outside of San Antonio this evening, just got done teaching, and guys, San Antonio Fire and departments all over this area attended the class today, and it's always very humbling to interact with these guys and pick up what they're doing and what they're into and what they think, and those are those perks, I think, that as students, as instructors, that we should never, ever forget about. And one of the things that I'm very curious about, Robert's opinion to start with, the variety of tactics that we see all over the country. I just kind of wanted to, I know it seems like a broad-based subject, but I'm very curious what your guys' opinions are about tactics. And let me apologize, there may be some background noise on my end because I'm out with some students at a bar trying to do a podcast and interact with all our students at the same time. So I'm trying to multitask this thing. So if I dip here and there, I apologize to everybody. But what are your thoughts about the multitude of tactics that are being employed? And then you add in those tactics and all the UL information and then all the stuff you see on YouTube, it's almost, and I kind of referred to in my class today as information overload. And I just want to see what you guys thought about all the information that's available to us now. Go ahead, Ro.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact word you said of overload. There's so much out there. I think it's great that it's out there and that people are sharing what works in their area of the fire service. I think what's important is that you're able to vet what information you're getting and make sure I'm gonna quote Steve right now and say experience matters because he's on the show. But I've heard Steve say that so many times and it resonates so true. If I'm learning from somebody and you're telling me your tactics, I want to know it's not something you just came up with. It's your experience saying it worked in your world of the fire service, and then I need to take it and say, how does this apply to me? Do we have the same buildings? Do we have this? You know, does this work for us? And take what I can from every person that I'm, when I take your class, take what I can that applies to us, and maybe you bring something that can really change the game for us, and maybe some of the other stuff you have really doesn't apply to us that much, and I need to be able to separate that out and not bring back information overload and try to implement everything I learned in the class every single time, but find what's going to work for us, what might be able to help us, what doesn't really apply to us that much, and be able to put it into what we do that's going to improve what we do. So I think it's great that the information's out there, really great that people are sharing their experience with it. And I think the biggest two things with it is vet who you're getting it from and make sure it's experience. And then does it apply to you? How do you apply it to your world? Don't just try to implement something the way somebody else does. You might not have any of the same metrics they do. Staffing, building construction, all this type of stuff. You've got to make it fit into your world, and sometimes it might, sometimes it might not. And I think that's where it really becomes, you have all this information and you have to narrow it down to what works and what will work for you.
Yeah, I agree with you there 100%. And I'll throw something out that I want Steve to chime in. This particular region of the country is very triple layer and very flat load based. And, you know, I agree with what Chief Ike says all the time. Whatever you have, just be great at it. And obviously these guys are down here. But one of the things I did today is I took a 3-month or 5-month rookie. I built a bundle for him and had him deploy it. And I didn't tell him anything. He didn't show it to him. I just told him the steps. And he immediately had the whole hose line deployed on a forward stretch with a bundle in a matter of 10 seconds. And it wasn't to show what's better or what's not. It's just trying to show them there are a lot of ways to do things. And it was really cool to watch this rookie who's never even seen that hose pack immediately go, oh, is that it? That's it. Couple of nozzles to the door. And it was really cool to actually do that with a student in a classroom setting today. So, Steve, kind of same thing along those same lines about all the different tactics and the information that's out there. Your opinions on that, sir?
Yeah, Todd, we were together this weekend and we were together a couple of weeks ago in Phoenix and da-da-da-da-da. But, you know, when we talk about tactics, I'm giving you my opinion of what I do that I have vetted that works. That's number one. I'm giving you what I do. I'm not saying it's going to work for you, but I'm telling you we've come up with a teachable solution to a common problem based on working through the problem and failing. Now, is that going to work for you, like Anthony said? I don't know. But, you know, there's this goes deeper, and I'm going to go a little deep here, if that's okay. But it goes deeper when you and I got on the job, where did we get our information? Where did we get our outside info? Senior guys in the firehouse, and what else? You had Fire Engineering Magazine, had Firehouse Magazine, and Fire Chief Magazine. When we were young, that was the only place that you could get information. So we did not have the interweb, right? We didn't have that. We couldn't Google it. We couldn't pull up YouTube and watch, when you put in first do fire, watch 1,000 videos. We didn't have that available to us. So I think the one thing that I think if we've gone backwards, it's the greatest thing in the world to be able to Google it and figure out the answer. But where's the information coming from? Like, there's a lot of bad information that's out there, in my opinion, from unvetted people that have taken somebody's class, put it out there, and then put a little twist on it. But what they don't understand is that little twist changes the entire game. Knowledge without experience is theory.
Knowledge just about to tell you, give me that theory.
Because,
I love that line.
Because the thing about it is, I have a ton of knowledge in my head that I have not had a chance to experience it. Okay, that doesn't make it wrong. It just means, yes, I vetted it in training. Yes, I vetted it here. I haven't had the chance to vet it on a fire. So to me, it's still theory-based until I get it to the fire. So think about it that way, to where you're not putting all your eggs in. You come to my class on Wednesday at FDIC and your company Tactical Traps. I'm giving you my experience, my mistakes, and solutions that I have found work for us in those mistakes. Don't take my word for it. You've never crawled down a hallway with me. You've never vetted this information in your department, like Anthony said. So I think the internet is a great thing. It exposes us to a lot, but I also believe it truly is overlooked.
Yeah, and I'll kind of go with that. And it's funny because I'm sitting at a bar and I'm with a firefighter from New Hampshire, and the majority of his fires are in triple deckers, where every
that's another animal.
Yeah, a different compartment. So the tactics that Dave uses on his job are going to be different than the tactics possibly used, obviously, on my job and your job and Roette's job. So it's interesting.
You know, I have the two and a halves that are very similar. They're blue frame, et cetera, but they're different because my half story isn't full, right? I have a half story that's an attic and a knee wall, these guys have got a whole nother level floor plan and then another half story and a knee wall. So it is absolutely different. Now, can we talk about void fires and balloon frame construction fires and start talking about bent tips and how to introduce water into voids and have the same conversation? Absolutely. But is it exactly the same? Absolutely not.
Right. And that's what the reason I brought that subject matter up when I was talking to Dave this afternoon and sitting here this evening with him, and we were talking about that. That was the first thing that came to my mind, that while there's all this information out there, sometimes guys are trying to apply things off of YouTube into their world, and it's not going to work. So I think one of the things that we always say, vet the information, try it, practice it, adapt it to what works in your organization, your hose loads, your hose beds, your territory, your setbacks, all those things got to come to play. And I think it's important that we really emphasize that message. When we talk about the instructor side, the FDIC side, you're going to hear for the guys attending all the different classes, you're going to see 100 different ways. But just because Todd Edwards says it or Steve Robinson or Anthony Roette says it, it's still got to apply to what you respond to and how your department has to operate at a three-story triple-decker fire and you got heavy fire throughout the third floor. You know, it's just a totally different animal, and it's, you know, I've really found our time in PA really interesting on just their hose stretches there in Mount Lebanon. You know, deeper setback in some areas, hills, stairs, two on the front, three on the rear, just a totally different variety. So I think it's important that
two on the front, four on the rear.
Yeah, totally different.
And there were several that were two on the front, four on the rear. I mean, it's another world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you say that, Todd, it makes me think of, you know, that's the great thing about FDIC is you're getting such a wide variety of instructors. You can find what you're looking for.
Definitely.
Right? Anything from a 10-man full-time and part paid and whatever your demographic is. There are instructors there teaching that demographic.
Oh, yeah.
Right? All the way to the FDNY, to Columbus, to Wichita, Kansas, you know, out there, my buddy Sammy Hiddle. You can run the gamut of what you're looking for, right? So that's the unique thing about FDIC that most conferences, or I don't know of any other conference really that offers that, is the wide variety of instruction that you can tailor your experience to what relates to you.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And again, it's one of those things, and we were having this conversation in my class today about not everything that you see on a class or on a YouTube video is going to work for you. So you have to allow your students, you have to allow your firefighters to adapt skill sets to their, you know, everything from their host packages. It may not work in their territory, may not work for their packages, but, man, going to a place like FDIC and Firehouse Expo and these micro conferences and hearing these different perspectives, I think is the true advantage of what, you know, coming off of YouTube and actually listening and asking your questions as well. Do not, I encourage everybody attending any conference, no matter what it is, do not hesitate to ask questions. I probably spent an hour and a half after my class answering questions to fit those guys' fire departments. I think that's the coolest thing about, you know, these kind of events, that we can have that one-on-one interaction. So I think those are all, you know, rock-solid points that we're talking about. The one of the other things I really want to get into is the modern fire behavior. And I think one of the things that really, and I had it happen today, where guys still have not bought in to what UL, Keith States, Ray McCormack, and all these guys have just poured out blood, sweat, and tears to give us this information, and they're still not looking at it in the right light. And I'm really hoping that maybe one of you can get that message out this evening to get guys to buy in, to really really dive into these studies and these videos and learn from what they're trying to share to us, instead of just assuming, that water mapping, that's nothing. We've always known that. Well, really understanding it and why we've been doing it, I think, is even more important. But I think we need to do a better job of marketing that message out to the American Fire Service. And I want to start with Rowett on that, of how you've been able to market some of your knowledge about all the stuff that's been going on, and then roll that same question right to Steve-O.
Yeah, to me, the biggest way that I've been able to get people that I interact with, people on my job that I'm around all the time, that were really not into the science part, especially after the first study came out, and they just, they felt like it wasn't full. They felt like things were missing. It wasn't really matching their experience. So they tended to just write off anything coming from UL at that point. To get them to buy into really the later studies and be willing to look into the interior stream study, get into the water mapping and see all that, was to kind of set it up and let them do it, was to get hands-on, go to the training center and work on it and actually demonstrate the water mapping and let them see, in their own two eyes, they're the ones flowing the water, exactly what's being talked about in the studies. And then when they saw it, it made it more relatable to their experience, I guess would be the best way to say it, to where they were willing to dive a little deeper and look at things, full spectrum of the studies going on and try to gain some from the science. But we still have a lot of guys that they're not bought into it. I think the first study it didn't really match their experience, and that turned them off of it. They felt like it wasn't full, and then they've just been biased against it. And it's been a slow battle. But as you get people, to me, it's when you get them doing it. You could put it on the computer all day long. Especially guys that got more time in, they don't really care. They want to go do it. They're going to learn with their hands. Most firemen are going to learn with their hands. If you can get out and do it, and we can demonstrate the water mapping, have a hallway, you could see the air movement. You could, I know Steve will probably talk about it later, but show angles as you're in hallways and things like that, and you relate it to things they've done, or like Steve said, mistakes they've made, and think fire. They go back and remember fires they had problems with, and maybe this would have helped. And that's what we've found, has been able to get people a little bit more bought in. But that's a more time-consuming and intensive process where you're not being able to get a lot of people at one time. But that's what we've had the most success with, of getting people to buy in, is when we get them to actually physically hands-on go and do stuff, and then they can relate it to what they've experienced before.
Yeah, I love everything you said, and I know Steve's had a lot of interaction with that group, and obviously, Ray's been a huge part of this, everything from the water mapping prompt now that's available for people to look at. They hear the name Ray, they just start building that massive prompt, which is amazing, which is way cool. Oh, Ray's coming out.
It is cool.
It is cool. So, yeah, Steve, if you kind of your thoughts and opinions on all this, because I think it's so vital that the fire service embraces this information and not just go, oh, we don't need that shit. And I think it's vital
embrace it. Here's the problem. Here's the biggest problem I had with the whole thing. Initially, the way it was rolled out, I didn't care for that. Because the first study was the exterior water. And guess what? It said a lot of things that debunked the way I was taught for a lot of years. Absolutely debunked it through science, and I agreed with it. The problem was that I have is that people took certain parts of the studies and hit the reset button on the United States Fire Service. Chief in the world bought into this thing that we have to have exterior water before we go inside. And you had a third of the information. You didn't have the complete story. You read a chapter of an entire book. And even in that chapter, if you wanted to dig a little bit, guess what? In that chapter, there were things that said, this may not be the best, right? It works, but it may not be the best. So then we hit the interior study. And then when we have the interior study, how many chiefs who changed their entire standard operating procedures or SOGs are going to go back after reading the interior study, eat crow, and say, I was wrong. We need to reevaluate this. Most of the dudes ain't that humble, right? And we're seeing that now. And then you add another chapter of the book, which was the coordinated attack study, which says ventilation is a good thing. Ventilation is a good thing of the fire room when we complete the flow path. Now, is the fire going to get bigger? Hell yes. Do we care? No. Why? Because I'm not accomplishing that until I have a charged hose line and I'm moving forward. Start flowing and moving, and you look at those numbers of survivability when we're flowing and moving and have the flow path completed. The survivability numbers of your civilians go up dramatically. So the point I'm making is, as fast as the United States Fire Service reset, I would really hope that hopefully there's a chief out there listening, that you take the time, attend a class by Key Stakes or Ray McCormick or any of these guys that are out there. Dennis teaches a lot of it, Dennis Legere, that are out there that were part of the study, that were part of the technical panels, that were involved in it, that go, hold on a minute. Look at this study. Look at this. Look at this. Look at this. There's a lot of moving parts to this, but I believe as the United States Fire Service, we hit the reset button based on one chapter of a whole book. And I don't think we've gone back and reread the first chapter, or we haven't read, or we continue to read the first chapter and don't decide not to read the second and third chapter because the first chapter was so good in our mind, I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think you nailed it, both of you, but I think you really nailed it, Steve, with the guys read, like, very limited parts, the reset the fire part. Man, I know departments that just jumped on that and said, okay, we'll go ahead everything from the outside before we go interior without reading the whole chapter or reading the whole study. And I think guys are doing a disservice to themselves in that case.
But Todd, when you look at that initially, when we did the exterior water, the water mapping study, I don't believe was out yet. So the water we were applying wasn't even being applied correct to maximize mm-hmm. its use. So
right.
Now, look, you know, we were in a predominantly volunteer area last weekend, and what did we have? We had folks that showed up with one guy, two guys, three guys. You know, guess what? That may be their option. To put the fire down. But that's where the water mapping prop and the other part of this whole scenario that UL's done that I think is invaluable is, look, if this tactic is going to be deployed, just do it correctly to maximize it. Maximize what you're getting out of it. You know, because if we don't put the water correctly, we don't apply the water correctly, we're done. I show a video on my program. They throw water for almost 50 seconds in a window, and it puts it down. Before they get through the threshold of the door, the fire's back out the window, right? Because we're not putting the contents out. It goes across the ceiling. It runs through the back wall. It runs down. We're not putting the actual things that are burning down. So that's a whole other thing to it. So I'm not against exterior water. I don't want people to think that's not an option, because it absolutely is and it does work. But if you're going to use that option based on what you have or based on your staffing or whatever it is to justify it and have to do it correctly, educate yourself another step that the water mapping and how we apply the water and where we apply it from works. You know, like kind of going down a rabbit hole here. I apologize, but
you're good. No, I love it.
When you look at the interior attack study, and it says putting a line flowing between the fire and the victim increases survivability. Who in God's great name said that we have to do a transitional attack or an exterior hit from the front yard? Who said that? Who said it has to go through a window? Why can't if I've got that blowing out the window, why can't I put it at the door, never cross the threshold, and do the same thing or even put the fire out? And I may be putting the line between the fire and the victim, which increases survivability. That's all I'm saying is keep reading. Don't stop at the first chapter. Keep reading. There's a lot more to it. There's a lot more out there that we can benefit as the United States Fire Service, and especially the folks that adopted X tree or water first, especially those folks, because if you're going to do it, at least do it right. At least do it right.
100% agree. And I think one of the things I would recommend to anybody struggling or has questions, please reach out to these guys. They will answer your questions. And, you know, and if you have the opportunity to see these things, the water mapping or Keith and Ray together teaching, sign up for that class. Ask the questions about you for all those things and why we do this and what the advantages and disadvantages. Of course, the Ray McCormick pizza, one of the best ever. So, yeah, all those things are really but those guys will answer those questions. They want to answer those questions. So I strongly, strongly recommend that guys just reach out and fill in those blanks and get those questions answered. One of the things I really want to make sure that we touch on, because it came up today, is the firefighter rescue survey site. And the numbers are astounding of how well the American Fire Service is actually doing when it comes to saving lives. The problem that we were talking about, there's the grabs we're recording aren't even all the numbers. And we've got to encourage, and that's another one of those subjects that we've got to really do a better job promoting. I don't know. Steve, are you on a headset by chance?
I am. Why?
We're getting a lot of background. I don't know if that's from your
there's
headset.
There's no one around me.
Oh, that's weird.
There's no one around.
Yeah, but the background, it always stops when you're talking. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's the connection on your device or what it is. It comes and goes. But, yeah, every time you talk, it's gone. So I don't know if that's what it is or, you know, I got some background now, too, myself. But the Firefighter Rescue Survey, and I wanted to speak on that because I think it's vital we do. Again, it's one of those things we've got to promote. What Brian Brush has done and his entire team with that survey is absolutely amazing that we're getting that information out, that we're winning, that we're doing things that nobody knew we were doing just 2 years ago. We had no clue we were making all these rescues throughout the country. And I think it's important that we get the entire American Fire Service. And Howard Reinwald said today, I thought it was perfect, spot on. It shouldn't be an option. It should be mandatory that we make this, that we document these rescues and show what we're really about, that we're not just EMS and we're not just going to fix plumbing issues at somebody's house at 3 o'clock in the morning, that we're making true, legitimate grabs at working house fires. And it's not just the Bostons and the Chicagos and the LAs and the New Yorks. It's middle America fire department with three guys making grabs. And I think it's important that we get that message more out. I want to get your feedback on that, Roette, starting with you, about how what would be a better way. Do we need to make it? What do you think about making it mandatory?
I think exactly what Howard said. I think it should be mandatory, just like every other part of the fire reporting is. I think that should be part of it. For the numbers aspect, but I think we've got to start locally, too, around the people you're around. Not everyone you work with is always going to be as into the job as you are, and some people probably don't even know the rescue survey is being done and information's out there, and we should be making sure they know, look, this is how good of a job we're doing. Look at the numbers that are being made in this country of people making rescues, and it's real. Like, the reality can set in. You could make a rescue tonight. It could be on you whether someone lives or dies, and a little reminder of it. But also, when it comes time to make that push and it's time to get real and you got a decision to make and you're not comfortable and you got to go, that you're realizing, look how good the United States is doing. This is worth it. It's really happening. Look at the numbers we have. We're literally rescuing, tons of people that we never knew it was to that level. And I think you can make things real for people locally that you're working with by doing that. And maybe it motivates some people that, you know, maybe it was just a job to them. It was a paycheck with insurance. And now it's real to them that they're going to have an opportunity to legitimately save somebody's life, not just on a medical run, but what decision they make in a fire and the way that they prepared for it is going to dictate if someone lives or dies. And maybe it motivates them to train better and hopefully changes the outcome, you know, on that day. And then you can start spreading it. You start with your crew and spread it through your department. But I think it, like Howard said, it should be a mandatory part of reporting. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with Howard today. I had not heard it put that way, and I thought it was amazing. It's a big push, and I want to get Steve's feedback on here real quick because I'm actually going to I'm going to do something while he's answering that same question. Go ahead, Stevie.
Yeah, no, I Brian and I talked a lot about it, and another guy that if you haven't heard him speak, you don't know what you're missing. Just an unbelievable mind that is common sense based, but very, 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 very educated. But he doesn't take it so deep you can't understand it. So Brian came up with this thing and said, "Are we winning or not? We don't know." And his keynote was unbelievable, where he was talking about. I saw a keynote he did, and it was talking about the war years and how we reset the fire service after the war years. And most of the guys, people listening, weren't around in the war years. Well, I grew up in the war years because my dad was a fireman. So, you know, I grew up in that era and knowing they went to a lot of fires and knowing they did all these things. And when America was burning, I mean, look that up, America burning. If you look up America burning, you're going to learn a lot. And Brian said, you know, when we reset the fire service and we got a bunch of money, we went to property conservation, not people conservation. And it's an absolutely legitimate thought. And I hope this thing really catches on to where we're getting some true data in. Because when we get the true data in, I think we will change our mindset necessarily from, yes, it's property, but it's people before property. And I hear people talking about it now. You know, Chief Ike's all about it, and there's a lot of dudes out there that are saying people before property, right? And the thing that's funny. It makes me laugh a little bit because I started in Columbus in '93, and it's like we always did VES. I don't know whether anybody knows that or not. We always did it. We did it every fire on the truck. The first ladders went to the porch roof. And two truck guys went in the two windows off the porch roof. That was every fire. We did it every time. So VES existed. We just didn't have a cool name for it. And a lot of grabs were made that way. Now, did we talk about that back then? No. Did we have reporting back then? No. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have all these things that we're talking about today. That information wasn't readily available to us. You know, when I started... Even when I got promoted, we didn't have a computer. You were doing all your reporting with in triplicate, right? We had the paper you went through, the copy paper that went between copies.
It was called carbon paper.
Yeah, I couldn't
Steven.
Think of the name of it. I couldn't think of it, but that's what we used because each NIFRS report had to be done in triplicate, right? One went to prevention, one went here, and one went there. It's like and that's what we had to do, handwritten, and data never got back to us. Somebody compiled it, but we surely didn't have access to it. I think it's important. How you get it out to the masses, I think you got to look at the I chiefs or the Metro chiefs or some people like that to really to let Brian do his thing and present to it so it can get some get traction. The internet's great. But it's not going to get traction until it's mandated by the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was really agreeing with Howard when he brought it up today. And I just at a bar, a bunch of guys in the class are here, and I just ran through the bar and did a really quick random poll, and it was about a 50% knew about it. One guy I'm sitting with right now is actually submitted to the survey, and the other half, this is the very first time that I'd ever heard the term firefighterrescuesurvey.com. So, again,
but what chief in their right mind, if it's presented, and if Brian presents it, I know how it's going to be presented,
right,
doesn't want to tote their successes, right? So I don't think the majority of the chiefs know this to make it mandatory. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's me as a crazy lieutenant sitting down here at the bottom, but – most of these chiefs don't know this even exists to get the information to them to see that we are winning, that our tactics are changing, and we're doing good.
Well, and I think that's the one aspect that I think guys need to understand. You can read the report of what actions were taken to make these rescues. What were the conditions? And I think, man, what a great – I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, and they, you know, the department's doing that particular tactic is what we have to do. But it should trigger us when we read these things and go, man, we should be working on our BES skills. We should be working on our line deployment skills. And take advantage of that knowledge that other departments have been willing to share about their successes and see how they actually apply kind of what we talked about earlier, how we can apply that to my own organization, whether I'm a three-station, two-man fire department or if I'm a Columbus, Ohio fire department.
So if you see this work and you show me it works, you physically show me this works, and I turn my a blind eye to it that I'm not even going to explore this, we're in the wrong job. We're in the wrong job. If somebody finds something that works, don't change to change because it's better. Right.
Yeah.
But you better damn well explore everything that comes to you because it may be something that works for you that could save a life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would be amazing if it was. I know Kurt Eisen's really been promoting getting under 2,000 civilian fire fatalities, and I think that message is loud and clear to only a very small portion of the American Fire Service. But same with the rescue survey. I think it's vital that every member, everybody listening tonight, everybody who downloads this, that if you tell one guy and that guy tells another guy, even if, I mean, it's a, you know, maybe I'm trying to get a little grassroots thing going here, but I would love to know what our real numbers are. I love the numbers we're getting, and I guarantee they're a hell of a lot higher than we're ever going to know about until we get this thing even bigger and better, and guys are willing to spend, you know, the time to fill out the survey. And it's not that difficult. I've looked at it. I've never filled a full one out, but I've gone through it. It's not that difficult. So I think it's really interesting. I think all of us, you know, myself included, we need to be promoting that site every opportunity it's coming out of our mouths. We're teaching a class on ice water rescue. We should be mentioning firefighter rescue survey just to get it out to even more. And so literally this week we probably enlightened about 40 students that had never heard of it as a grand total of all the guys that were in the room this week here in Texas. So I love that we're getting the message out. And that I'm actually sitting with a survey reporter, that I'm sitting with guys that had not heard of it. Now they have. They've already got it on their phone. So, yeah, I don't think it's that hard, but we got to be pushing those messages out every chance we get, those positive messages, the UL positivity, the rescue survey, the positivity of what that's doing for all of us. That's benefiting all of us in the it benefits our job. It benefits our training. It benefits our tactics, our strategies. It makes us better at our jobs. And I think that's, you know, maybe a way to really promote it every opportunity that we can. And I know every time I see a rescue pop up on Brush's site, I immediately share it to all my media, trying to get that message out to as many people as I can. You guys still there? Did I lose you?
Yep.
No, yeah, no, I'm here. I just waiting on you
okay,
to go
yeah.
to the next thing, Todd.
Yep.
Yeah, no. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Ro.
No, I agree with you guys. Like I said, I think it starts with the getting local people because you have influence on them, and then just finding a way to make it mandatory. If you can make it mandatory, I think the numbers, like you said, would be astounding of how successful we really are as a collective whole in this country.
Yeah, 100%. 100% think we're on the right. I think we're on the right track. I really do. So with those two things we talked about, UL, Firefighter Rescue Survey, obviously the three of us could talk about hose load and hose deployments and all that for 8 hours, and that's why I'm trying to stay off those subject matters. What is, and again, this is more of that, it's very generalized questions. I love those kind of questions sometimes. And I'm going to start with Steve on this one, then flip it to Roe. where do you see the future of the fire service going to next? Because it seems like every year there's some latest and greatest thing or, you know, whatever. But where do you see the fire service going, especially now? Because if you look across the country, we have so much turnover in the fire services that we're seeing young guys coming up through the ranks faster than ever before. Where do you see the fire service in the next 5 years heading to, Steve? Because, you know, as much as you travel, you're exposed to thousands of guys every year. So you're getting a lot of really interesting feedback, I'm sure. But I'm just curious of what your thoughts are on that.
I think we're winning. We're winning right now. We're winning right now, and what I mean by that is I don't think I've ever seen as much education going to people in my career than is going on right now, right? You had FDIC, you had Firehouse Expo. That was the only two things going on. And FDIC is the Super Bowl. Let's say that first and foremost. And you're going to get anything and everything, every manufacturer, anything new and latest and greatest is going to be at that show. But we're winning as far as an education standpoint across the board. But people are seeking out information. If they're seeking out information, they're doing that's a good thing. I think why is that happening? I think because fires are down, right? But again, are we maximizing the experience we're getting from each fire? So Todd, you're a boss. Anthony, you're a boss. You know, you got a new kid that comes out of their fire. Hey, man, nice job. Great job on the nozzle. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. What color was the house? Fire, right? It's like fire. It was fire, right? And that's normal. That's okay. But then the next fire, I asked my new guy the same question. He goes, hey, boss, by the way, that house was gray. Yeah, it was. Was there a side door? Oh, man. Right? So challenge your folks. Challenge them with different questions and seeing different things that we maximize the experience of each fire because we're not getting as many as we used to. I don't go to as many fires as I used to. Challenge your young folks and everybody on your crew to maximize the experience. And a lot of that is, I'm going to go down a rabbit hole, Todd, but you know, speed of the game. I wrote a little blog article for Paul Combs on his on one of his cartoons there last year, and the speed of the game to me is this. Think about the NFL and think about college football. You have the Heisman Trophy winner, who is the best player in college football, period, right? He's the best. How many of those folks go to the NFL the first year and absolutely just explode and are truly hugely successful? It doesn't happen often. Not often.
Yes.
At all.
Very
second
rare.
Year. Mm-hmm. Very rare. Second year. They're okay. Third year, you start hearing their name. Fourth year, all of a sudden, they just absolutely explode. And they're the MVP. They're this, they're that. And the media asks the same questions all the time. They say, what changed for you? And every one of them have the same answer. The game slowed down for me, and I'm seeing the field better, and I'm making better decisions. The United States Fire Service and going to fires is no different. The more the game can slow down, the more information you can gather, the better decisions you're going to make on the fire ground. That's a fact. That is a fact. And unfortunately, some guys with 30 years on, the game never slows down for them. Some guys, it's 2 years. Some guys, it's 10 years. Some guys, it's 3 years. Every individual is different on how they deal with the speed of the game. The faster we can slow the game down and the more you see, the better decisions you're going to make on the fire ground. That's at least been my experience.
So I'm sorry, Steve. I broke. Yeah, I got you. I got you back. I'm sorry. I'm in a kind of an odd location. What about
Nope, I got you.
Yeah, for Rowett, where do you see us in 5 years, bro? Did we lose Row?
I don't know. I don't hear him. I just think it's a big deal, Todd. It's a big deal because we don't we don't have the fires. So maximize that experience as much as you can, and that means challenging your folks. If you're not challenging your folks daily, they're going to get stagnant. They get stagnant, and then we do catch a job, it's not going to be the same. You're not going to have the same reaction, you know.
Right,
and
right.
I think it's reps, sets, reps, all that add up to it, but it's also challenging to see them to see beyond the fire. The fire is showing. That's the easy part. I know where that's at. Right?
Yeah.
It's when we got to get into Dave Dodson stuff of reading smoke and, you know, volume, velocity, intensity, color, all those things. Challenging them at those moments are probably more important or as important as the sets and reps, in my opinion, to slow mm-hmm. the game down so they can make better decisions.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that.
Did we lose him?
He's trying to get back in. He's back. Okay.
No, I just lost. Steve went silent on my end, but I'm good. I can hear him again.
Okay, good, good. So, Roet, you remember the question while you were messing with the computer?
Yep.
Right, where do you see 5 years, bro?
So I think we're in the same direction Steve said, but I'm going to go a little bit of a different angle with it, and maybe that was just, you know, my personal experience being younger and newer to the fire service was, I think it's the, like Steve said, the amount of information that's out there and the amount that people are seeking it. But I think that the change that we're experiencing is how willing people are to get outside of their bubble, how willing people are to get outside of just their department, the way things have been done in their area forever, and reach out to someone from somewhere else and say, how do you guys do it? And to challenge, will this work better for me? I mean, that was my path, you know what I mean? I mean, for the area, we're a pretty big department, and we do things our way, and started going to conferences, meeting different people. And we talked in the beginning about the good and the bad of social media, and there's so much out there that's great, but you also have to vet it. But at the same time, the resources it gives you, how many resources I have like you guys, that it, a lot of it started through conferences and then grew through social media. And then having those resources to call on and have mentors that aren't just the people you work with. On a bigger job with more experience, a lot of times it's easy to find that solid mentor. On a smaller department, you might not get a good crew, and then it's hard for you to find that mentor. And I think there's a lot more people finding mentors outside the fire, their individual fire department now within the fire service that they're going to, who are mentoring them, bringing them up, showing them the right way. Even if they don't have someone, you know, doing it physically for them, someone's being there for them that's guiding them in the right direction and providing that information to them that they're going back and then trying to vet through for themselves. And I think that's the path we're going down is, like you guys said, fires are down. I mean, obviously, I don't have as much time in as you guys do, but they're down from when I first came in. And I think that drives people to train more. Some people, maybe it drives to train less because they're not doing as much. Other people is driving them to do more because they're not getting the opportunity as often to do it. So they're training more to try to hone that skill to be ready when they need to. So there's this heavy push for training. But I think the thing is that there's a lot more willingness for people to get outside of their bubble now and go to a conference, especially with all these smaller conferences that are going around. You typically can drive to a conference regardless of where you live. You can find something in driving distance and go out and learn from a very, very highly respected person from anywhere in the country and say, okay, well, this is their experience. This is mine, mate. You know, and the best part is, like you said about where you're at today in Texas, Todd, how many times did you have a one-on-one conversation with somebody today that may have – you just put them on a different path because of what those conferences do? And maybe they were going down a bad path because they didn't have that solid mentor, and you were able to give it to them and correct that path they were going down. So I think the future holds for us that big push for training, but that willingness to get outside the bubble, learn from other people, not just within our job. But then the important part of that is to come back and say, what of this does work for us and what doesn't? And just don't try to implement wholesale change just to be like somebody else because they're having success in their city, and you have to find what works for you at the same time. So I think that's the path we're going down, but also the battle we're going to go down is not just trying to implement wholesale change just to make change like we talked about with the exterior water study. But I think that's the path we're heading down, me personally.
Yeah, no, I think both of you kind of nailed things on the head there. I think that the demand for officer development training and developing that 2-3-4 year guy needs to start a lot earlier than maybe in the past years. And unfortunately, it's just nature of the beast that these young guys are being forced almost into earlier leadership roles, and we're not always giving them the best training or the best skill sets or the best knowledge on how to lead firefighters. The majority of the fire service is very dependent on the standard stock programs of Fire Officer 1 and Fire Officer 2. I'm not knocking those programs, but those programs do not teach you how to lead men and women into a burning building. And I think that's one of those programs that it's one of the things I probably get the most calls about, you know, officer development type of programs, because there's just not enough out there. I think that's an area that I'm not saying we're on that path. I think it's a path we need to get a lot of firefighters, a lot of fire departments back on, so we can continue with the successes we're already having when it comes to the rescues and the grabs and all the other improvements in the fire service at the same time.
Todd, officer development starts with self-development and self-accountability. We've got to get away from accepting mediocrity as an acceptable thing. It's not acceptable with what we do.
Right.
You know, we've embraced mediocrity because we don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. Well, there needs to be accountability, whether that's hurts your feelings or not. There's ways to do that, but I want to give you the things you need to succeed, but at the same time, when you don't meet expectations of the departments or even mine, there needs to be consequences to that. Because guess what? There's consequences to the civilians that are out there that we're serving. It's kind of a big deal.
It's a huge deal. I agree with you 100%. Some of that, and maybe we need to even look at, you know, the hiring processing and who we're bringing to the table, and then, you know, our, you know, the kid that you brought with you to Pennsylvania, that I can see him easily in my mind's eye being a boss on your job. His mentality.
Oh,
his
Colton's got talent. Colton Foyle. He's a great young man that's into the job. That's all about learning and working. So I'm blessed to have him on the job for sure.
Yeah, those are the kind of, again, not everybody we get is the Colts, unfortunately, but we've got to urge guys to be more like the Colts of the fire service and not some of the other things that we all have to deal with and experience, you know, throughout our careers. I think that's, again, I think you could literally take this, the way we develop our officers and we train our people and we train our company, our future officers, our acting officers, is a huge gap in the training.
That's a whole other conversation.
Hey, yeah. It's, well, that guy's been here 2 years.
it's a big deal. That's a big deal that nobody wants to talk about because everybody's scared to death to talk about it.
Right.
Not everybody is designed to sit in the right front seat.
No, and that's okay.
They're not all cut the same.
Right. I was not designed to be on a truck. I was never a truck guy. I'm not a tool guy. And, you know, I never pretend to be. I don't, you know, and I never will be pretend that. But, you know, that's where, you know, guys who aren't cut out for that, there's a lot of other avenues that they can be just as important to the job. A senior man in my firehouse is just as important as a good lieutenant, as a good captain, and in a lot of cases. And I think everybody should look at that FDNY, the way they model and how they really hold their senior people in high regard, and not, oh, the old guy. They hold those guys in high regard for what they do and what they bring to the table. That's very unique. And I wish more departments ran it, you know, embrace that.
Bob Panetta is my senior guy. He came on with me. He's my driver. And if I say it, if he's talking, I'm talking. That's it. It's not up for discussion. It's if he's talking, I'm talking. And the firehouse works really well because of that.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And unfortunately, you know, like I said, that so much of the fire service are a lot smaller organizations. They're great organizations with great people, But the senior man concept is not even doable because they're looking around, their senior man years in, and the next senior man's the fire chief.
What's crazy to me, though, Todd, there's more leadership classes than I've ever seen in my life.
Oh,
everywhere
yeah.
you turn, there's leadership classes. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. But what's changing? Are we actually implementing those tactics and the things we're learning? Or are the wrong people taking leadership classes? Maybe the leaders need to take some leadership classes instead of the privates. You know, we're trying to make everybody, the United States Fire Service is trying to make the water boil from the bottom up, which it does. It just takes time, you know.
Right.
So eventually those folks are going to get there. But I think, you know, if there's any chiefs out there, maybe dig in a little bit and go back to school because your young guys are doing it and you might not even realize they're doing it. And they're learning leadership tactics and embrace those folks and help move your organization forward.
Yeah, and there are some true fire chiefs out there, and they're not just teaching. They're taking classes, and they're learning.
Well, Scotty Thompson, really? Are you kidding me? Chief Thompson?
Yeah.
Chief Reinwald.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, I can go down the list of chiefs. Chief Ike. I mean,
yep.
You go down the list of chiefs that, you know, Chief Salka. You go right
yep.
down the list of these guys that are just unbelievable people, number one. But number two are true leaders. They're the ones sitting in these classes. They're humble enough to know they don't know everything. So put your ego aside, man.
Yeah.
I make mistakes on every fire, Todd. It's not that we make mistakes. It's how we recover. And if we fail, we fail together. And when we fail, we come up with teachable solutions to a common problem, and we do it together. That's
yep.
where you start building crews, period.
Yeah. I tell you another one who I literally have sat in. He sat, I don't know how many classes of mine he has sat in Pensacola, is Steve Nelms out of Nashville.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Great guy.
And he, yeah, amazing person. His attitude towards the fire service is something everybody in the country can model. And he sits in every class the whole day, all 3 days down there, you know, that I've been involved with him in Pensacola. In uniform, you know, not showing off brass, but he has his – everybody he brings with him from Nashville Fire is in every class.
There's a uniform.
All,
yep.
And that's leadership. I mean, he doesn't duck out and go sit the beach bar. He sits in every class. And I taught at the last day on the last class. And I guarantee and here's what – this is why I have so much respect for that man. Not only is he in the class, he's in the front row of the class.
yeah, every time.
Every time.
You're right.
Guys, that's absolutely amazing, man. And I hope somebody gets that message to him. I have the utmost respect for him. And if you look at the guys coming out of Scott Thompson Farm, the Colony, their operations chiefs, some of their BCs, every class, them guys are sitting in there. And they're taking in notes. They're asking questions. They're giving unbelievable feedback when I ask them questions. So, yeah, there's some true leadership members out there. There's some true leaders in our job that we need to do a better job promoting those guys ourselves as well. And I think we're getting it. I think we're winning. I think those guys are winning. They're changing the fire service. Guys like Scott, guys like Chief Nelm, guys like Chief Isaacson, those guys are changing the American Fire Service. I don't even know if they realize the impact they're having on the future chiefs. They may not be around when that 28-year-old kid is now a battalion chief 5, 6, 10 years down the road, but those guys are having unbelievable impact on the future of the fire service, and they'll probably, unfortunately, never get to truly see that impact and truly be appreciated for all they're doing for the fire service. That's why I always promote Scott Thompson's book. I mean, you know, when we talk about mentoring. Man, that's your go-to book. He, the Functional Fire Company is a go-to must-read book as a boss. No doubt. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind. It's one of the books I reference still today when I'm teaching. I look at that book and go, wow, this guy is way ahead of his way ahead of the curve. So
yeah,
I think
Chief
Thompson
has been around a long time. He taught with Chief Lasky at FDIC for a long time with the survival
mm-hmm.
stuff and. He came through the ranks the right way, and he's just a gentleman, number one. But number two, he's a good person and really has a great message.
Yeah, but you said something that resonated with which why I brought those particular names up. When you said, you know, leave your egos at your desk and come to some classes. and see what we're teaching out there. See what's changing. See what your young 21-year-old kids are absorbing so you can send that message back with your fire departments. And those guys are the leaders in showing that. They're not just saying it. They're not just sending two guys. They're sending as many guys as they can afford, as many guys as they can get offline, and they're not just sending them. They're there with them, doing it with them. That's the part I think is the most amazing to me. Another
absolutely
rock star, I think, is Rob Fisher. You know, he's not a fire chief, he's a chief officer, but that dude sits in every class, every time he's in every class, taking notes. Those are the leaders that guys should be watching. You can have all the fancy brass bugle shit you want, but you got to show me that you're a leader, and those guys show me they're true leaders. And those are guys I try to be like when I'm doing things. And that's what everybody should be looking for is the Rob Fishers and all the guys that we're talking about right now. And I know that's kind of what that whole subject went down a different hole, but I think that those guys are well worth mentioning, well worth following, well worth looking up if you never heard their names. Brian Brush, another chief officer that is leading the American Fire Service, even on his two crutches and his broke weak ankle.
He's gotten soft in his old age.
Yeah, that's it. Getting old ain't for wussies. You got to be tough to get old. So this is how we're going to do this. I'm going to get Rowett's final thought. I'm going to get Stevie's final thought. I'm going to give a final thought. Please, during your final thought, make mention of your class at FDIC. I need one. Oh, I got to ask a beer question. So please make sure you mention your classes so guys can look you guys up at FDIC, and we'll get ready to close this thing out. I'm going to start with Roy Ed on his final remarks and your class stuff, Roy.
All right, so first thing I want to say in my final remarks is, Steve, thank you for taking time out of your day. I know we've talked about it for a while, but take time out of your day to come talk to us on the show. You know, a huge mentor for me, so to spend some of your day with us means a lot. But my final thoughts on what we talked about today is to get out, to learn something, and bring someone with you. We talked about a lot of different things from the path we're going down to implement, getting people to understand the UL studies and not just write it off because of, you know, disliking some of the first study and not getting the whole picture, or how to get people to do different things, get people to come along with you, share with them, get outside of your bubble, just be about the training. Get out, try to learn something, see how it implements to your fire department. Don't just wholesale change just to change, but see, be willing, like Steve said, to challenge everything you do and make sure you're doing it the best way you possibly can for the people we serve so that we're giving them the best service. And bring it along with you. If you can spread a couple people, they spread a couple people, it can spread like fire. So that'd be my final message on what we talked about tonight. I'll be at FDIC. I'll be presenting the initial attack line Wednesday afternoon. And I'll be around. Definitely going to try to catch up with you two guys while we're up there. So, Steve, again, thank you for your time.
No, absolutely. I appreciate you having me. I know we've tried to do this for a while and schedules didn't. I could have probably done it at the firehouse, but I probably would have been interrupted multiple times. So it finally worked out that I wasn't on duty to do it. So, you know, thank you guys, number one, first and foremost. Good format, good talk. You know, we just barely touched the subject of a lot of this stuff. And, you know, you control your destiny in this job. You're going to get out of it what you put in it. If you have a career, your whole career, and have a great career and, you know, just do enough and get by and be a good firefighter, but yet not be a great firefighter, sure you can. And there's a lot of folks that choose that path. But my thing is, you know, we do this, give it all you got. Give it all you got. Enjoy the ride. I mean, I'm on the backside of my ride, and, you know, in 3-4 years, I'm going to be out the door, and I don't have regrets, and I don't want to have regrets that I wish I would have. You know, I don't ever want to say I wish I would have. So, you know, I've tried to learn as much as I can while I'm still here and keep pushing, and that's what I'm doing. So my classes, we have a couple. Stretching for Success, hands-on, Monday, Tuesday. Ray McCormick, myself, Todd Edwards, Man, we got Bill Ross for my job, another 35-year engine boss. We've got Danny Stutler from Carroll Stream. We've got Shannon Stone, another 30-year guy. The amount of experience we have in stretching, and we talk about positioning and vertical stretching and splitting doors, splitting cars, fences, obstacles, all those things that make the common stretch hard, we address in that program. So I would encourage you to sign up for that program. It's a four-hour program, and you're going to get reps. We set every station up twice, and the reason we do that is with the number of students, we get as many reps as possible. My goal isn't just to show you this. My goal is to get you enough reps that you can go home at the end of the week and do it and teach it and perform it. And actually truly bring it back. Not, you know, it's not one rep and go. You're going to get multiple reps doing this. And that's our goal, that you're able to take it back and truly teach it to your folks to get better. I also lecture Wednesday afternoon. It's a brand new class. It's debuting at FDIC. It's Engine Company Tactical Traps. And Engine Company Tactical Traps is going to cover Type 2 construction, meaning your Family Dollar fires, your auto parts store fires, stuff like that. We're going to talk about basement fires and knee wall fires and attic fires and balloon frame construction, common mistakes on car fires. We're going to touch a little bit on electric cars and lithium ion batteries. I'm not an expert on that by any means, but I'm going to dive into that a little bit just to give you a little information to at least maybe get you started and get you curious on the avenues. And I'm going to give you some places to go to learn more. But the concept of the class is basically, where are the common mistakes made and how do we address those? And that's basically what the class is going to be. So thank you again, Todd, Anthony. I appreciate you having me, and I hope to see everybody at FDIC 2022.
Awesome. And I'm going to close this out. What'd you say?
No, I was just agreeing, Anthony, saying definitely got to get together. Yeah, I was just agreeing with him and saying definitely got to get together while we're up there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll be presenting on Wednesday afternoon as well. I'm doing a revised class on decision-making. We're going to talk a lot about complacency. You're going to hear a successful outcome. You're going to hear a non-successful outcome. You're going to hear the radio traffic of those events. And it really boiled down to some great decisions. And there's going to be a lot of bad decisions that we'll be able to show you. And it's not to point fingers. It's so you guys and the people that attend see where my mistakes were, my complacency at a fire that resulted in a near tragic event. And, again, these are the things that we need to share with the American Fire Service and not try to hide from them. I don't hide from those mistakes. Stevie doesn't hide from his mistakes. Roette doesn't. And it's not to bash. It's so that next firefighter in that scenario doesn't make the mistakes I made. And hopefully that will keep somebody alive one of these nights, whether it's next week or in 5 years. And that's the main goal of that program. Obviously, I'll be with Stevie for the stretching class, and we will rep you as hard and as fast as we can and get you as much as we can. And it's truly an honor just to be a small part of such an incredible conference. I'm very excited. I can't wait to get up there and be with the brothers and the sisters. Enjoy the week in a non-COVID year for a change. That's probably the most thing I'm excited about, is get back with some guys like Danny and some of the guys I haven't seen for a long time because of all this. So I think it's going to be almost like a family reunion when everybody gets there. So, guys,
I appreciate you.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I want to thank Steve. Brother, you know I love you guys. And again, you know, it's been a whole week. I don't know what to do, Steve. I haven't seen you in a week.
Todd, it's only been 2 days.
It's only been 2 days. It'll be a week.
Been 2 days, Todd. It'll be a week and a half. We'll be apart a whole week and a half, right?
Well, I just sent you a picture last night with me and America's new fire chief. That's Howard Reinwald. We redubbed him last night after he had a few Moscow beers.
Yeah.
So, super fun.
All right. Well, tell everybody gather. I said hello, please.
I sure will. Everybody, thank you for being a part of this. Send your questions to us, and we will always get back in touch. Everybody have a great night. Talk to everybody soon. Thank you.
Have a good night.